What, Dad?
What, Pete?
Nothing like a nice cup of tea.
Nothing like a nice cup of tea.
Unless it's a glass of beer.
Unless it's a glass of beer.
Which is nothing like a cup of tea.
Which is nothing like a nice cup of tea.
I'm glad we agree at least on that.
Yeah, well...
I've got you here for a specific reason.
Yes.
As you know, we haven't talked for 20 years.
That is correct, yes.
And I thought that as we had not talked for 20 years, perhaps now was a time to break the ice and just go into the reasons for this, in my view, foolish quarrel.
Yeah.
I mean, it was only about a little thing.
Well.
Yourself. And I could see no reason for continuing the vendetta.
No, it's true, it's true, I think.
So you're willing to admit you're completely wrong, are you? Is that my understanding? This is certainly the impression I've got so far from the conversation. If conversation it be deemed.
Yes, it's true.
So you are completely wrong?
No.
Do I understand the word no to mean N-O in the Latin sense of the word?
In the Latin sense of the word, yes.
As opposed to yes.
And in the biblical sense.
Yes, yes, so would I.
Are you leading
somewhere? So what are we arguing about? What are we arguing about then?
Yes.
We have not spoken for 20 years and now we have broken the silence.
Yes.
Or rather, I have broken the silence because I am talking. Whereas you are sat there not talking. Would you agree that I am talking and you're not talking?
Yes, I
would. You may speak now.
Because I can't get a word in edgeways.
Oh, fine. Mm. Well, fine. Yeah. In which word would you like to put in
edgeways? I have no idea. Perhaps...
Which particular word would you like to put in edgeways? What about edgeways?
Maybe I'd like to put the word edgeways in.
Put it in. Edgeways. Feel free.
Put it on its side. Thrust it through.
And let it be.
Let it be.
All right, we've admitted the word edgeways.
Edgeways.
Where's it got you?
Edgeways.
Where has it got me?
Nowhere.
Nowhere? Is that another word
I think I put edgeways and nowhere.
Nowhere, edgeways. Is that the story of your life,
Dad? That is the story of my life.
Edgeways, nowhere, edgeways.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. No, thank you.
I don't think I shall be bothering to have another cup of tea with you for another 20 years. If that is the way you distort the truth.
That is certainly the way I distort the truth.
Edgeways.
Edgeways.
Nowhere.
Nowhere.
Cheers. Cheers.
Here, excuse me. Oh, you see 500 blokes go by here on cycles?
Well, all in stripy shirts and little black pants.
That's right, yeah.
About 500,
yeah.
No, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it, because I lost the fat back at Guildford, you see.
Oh, where are you trying to get it?
Well, I'm in a Birmingham Mandalay cycle race.
This is the road to Mandalay, isn't it?
Nah, this is the Samarkand bypass.
The Samarkand bypass?
Yeah.
Well, I took the first left at the railway junction back in Guildford.
No, you should have gone right there, gone through the traffic lights, and then over the roundabout, straight through to Mandalay.
Well, I went left there.
No, well, it's just the Samarkand bypass.
Well, what's my best way to get to Mandalay, then?
Well, you're a bit out of here, aren't you? Well, you've got your two alternatives, really. Either you go back the way you come, but that's not a favourite because you get caught up in the one-way system and the Wimbledon traffic now. Terrible.
Yeah.
I advise you, straight ahead, just follow your nose, basically, till you come to the Great Wall of China, Sea Junction. You turn right there, Xanadu, and it's 1, 2... Third on the left, takes it to Neasden, then it's signposted from there to Mandalay.
So it's straight out of the Great Wall of China, fork right, through to Xanadu, then to Neasden, and it's signposted.
Signposted to Mandalay. That way, you take that out. Start to go up that way.
Right, through there.
Yeah, all right then.
Thanks,
good luck.
Bye.
Remember, straight through, up in the sea, Johnson, Great Wall of China.
Too bad, Cheers.
What have you been doing lately, then?
Well, quiet, pretty quiet. Not been up to much.
No.
I had a spot of the usual trouble the other day.
Oh, did you? What happened then?
Spot of the usual trouble. Well, I come home about 11:30. We've been having a couple of drinks, remember?
That's right, yeah.
I come home about 11:30.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm feeling a bit tired, so, you know, I thought I'd go to bed, you know, take my clothes off and so on, you know.
That's right, yeah. Well, don't you take your clothes off before you go to bed?
No, I made that mistake this time. I got the wrong way around. Anyway, I got into bed, settled down. I was just about, you know, reading the Swiss Family Robinson.
It's good, isn't it?
It's a lovely book, Dad. It's a lovely book. And I got out to about page 483, second paragraph, when suddenly, bring, 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 bring.
What's that?
There's a phone. Go, bring, bring. So I picked up the phone and... You know who it was?
Who?
Bloody Betty Grable. Calling Transatlantic. Bloody Betty Grable. I said, look, Betty, what do you think you're doing? Calling me up 11:30 at night. She said, it's 2:30 in the afternoon over here. I said, I don't care what bloody time it is. There's no need to wake me up. She said, Peter, get on a plane. Come dance with me. Be mine tonight.
I thought it was the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah, what she probably meant was be mine tonight, tomorrow afternoon, our time.
Didn't she mean tomorrow afternoon?
Her time, anyway, be mine tonight, she said. I said, look, Betty, we've had our laughs, we've had our fun, but it's all over.
Yeah.
I said, stop pestering me, get back to Harry James, this trumpet. Yeah. Stop pestering me, I said. I slammed the phone down and said, stop pestering me.
Shouldn't you have said stop pestering me before you
slammed the phone down? I should have, yeah.
Well, it's funny to say that, because a couple of nights ago, you remember we had a couple of drinks.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
I'll come home, you know. Yeah. I was going to bed, felt a bit tired having a nightcap.
Yeah, of course.
And I was just dropping off nicely, and all of a sudden I heard this hollering in the kitchen.
Hollering?
And screaming and banging on the door, you know, I thought I must have left the gas on.
Yes.
So I go down here, I fling open the door. You never guess, this bloody Anna Magnani up to her knees in rice, screaming at me. Let's see wine trotty, and more ain't made poor favori.
Italian,
yeah. She covered in mud, she grabbed hold of me. She pulled me all over the floor. Yeah. She had one of them see-through blouses.
All damp, showing everything.
And she threw it. We rolled all over the floor. Yeah. I picked her up. I said, get out of here.
Yeah.
Get out of here. You Italian thing. I said, get out of here. I said, don't you come here and mess up my rice again, mate.
I said, oh, no. I had the same bloody trouble about two nights ago.
Yeah.
I come in about 11:30 at night. We've been having a... couple of drinks, I remember. I come in, I get into bed, you see, feeling quite sleepy. I can feel the lids of my eyes beginning to droop, you see, a bit of the droop in the eyes. I was just about to drop off when suddenly, tap, tap, tap at the bloody window pane. I looked out, you know who it was?
Who?
Bloody Greta Garbo. Stark naked. Save for a shorty nighty. She was hanging onto the windowsill. And I could see her knuckles all white. She was saying, Peter, uns neuen in the neuen in the. You know how these bloody Swedes go on. She wouldn't go. I had to smash her down with a broomstick. Poke her off the windowsill. She fell down onto the pavement with a great crash.
She had a nightie on, is that all?
That's all she had on, Dad. Just a...
see-through?
A see-through, shorty nightie. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Except for her dark glasses, of course. Dreadful business.
Well, it's funny you used to say that.
Funny, I should say that.
Yeah, four nights ago, I'll come home. You know, we've been having a couple of drinks,
yeah.
I'll come through the door.
Yeah.
And,
Sniff.
Sniff. I went, you know, funny smell, I thought. Smells like wood burning.
Probably burning wood, Dad.
What's that?
Burning wood, that's a perfume worn by sensual, earthy women.
Oh, funny you should say that, because I come in the bathroom, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bit stronger here, you know, it's funny. Sure. And come in the bedroom, you know, it's getting ridiculous, this smell, you know.
Burning
wood. And so I get in a bed, you know, turn the covers back. It's a bit warm in bed, I thought. Funny, you know, being warm. And I get in a bed, I pull out a light. And it's just going off the kip.
Yeah.
And suddenly, I feel a hand on my cheek.
Which cheek was that, Dad? cheek, was it?
It was the left upper.
Left upper.
I said, I thought, you know, funny. I turned on the light. Bloody hand here, scarlet fingernails.
Yeah, who was it?
You never guessed, bloody Jane Russell.
Jane Russell.
Jane Russell in bed with me, stark naked. I said, Jane!
With a huge
ridge of feet. Yeah. I said, Jane, I said, get out of here.
Get out.
Get out of here. I said, you may be mean, moody and magnificent, but as far as I'm concerned, it's all over.
Yeah,
I threw her down, I took her out of bed, I threw her down the stairs, I threw a bra and a gauze panties after, I threw a bra and a green silk scarf. Get out here! Get out of here, you hussy!
Good evening. This evening we have taken our not only but also cameras to the heart of London's West End, where at a nightclub, La Maison Sophistique, we see the opening of the great coloured jazz singer, Bo Dudley.
Terrific.
Did you like it?
Yes, I thought it was tremendous. Now, Bo Dudley, or may I call you Bo?
B.O., call me Bo.
I think for the benefit of English viewers, it would be a help if you could actually explain some of the lyrics, which I think the slang is a little hard to understand. Could we go through the song verse by verse?
Be delighted. Yes.
Good.
Mama's got a brand new bag, yeah.
Mama's got a brand new bag, yeah. Yeah. This is fairly self-explanatory, isn't it? It's a simple story. Mama, the sort of Harlem mother, has gone out into the streets and she's seen this bag, which is very nice, and she's bought it, and that's it. She's got a brand new bag. What kind of a bag would that be?
Well, of course, in the old days, it probably would have been a carrier bag.
Yes.
But in these days of scientific advancement, it's probably a gaily coloured plastic bag.
A gaily coloured plastic bag, which she's bought, and it's brand new. And the song goes on.
It goes on. We got it. Groove it the whole night long, baby.
We are going to groove it the whole night long, baby. Now, this presumably is a reference to the fact that the mother, having bought the bag, decides to make some indentations on it, to make some grooves on the bag, a sort of decorative pattern, presumably.
It's a darky decorative process.
Is it?
Yes.
How is it done, the grooving?
It's done with a groover.
With a groover.
Of course, in the old days, when they used to have knife grinders and watermelon sellers in the streets, you used to have groovers. Mississippi Groover!
Yes.
They used to call out, you know. And, well, in fact, it's now a purely domestic occupation.
It's done by the mama.
By mama.
By mama.
By the darky mama. We're going to groove it the whole night long.
It takes a long time.
It takes a long time.
It takes a long time.
The whole night long.
Bags, yes.
Baby. It's for the baby.
Is it the child's anniversary or something?
Probably the child's anniversary or the first tooth being cut, that sort of thing.
And so the bag is grooved by the mother all night long. It's a long process.
Exactly. And it goes on. We're going to work it out, baby.
We are going to work it out, baby. This is a little surprising, isn't it, that having grooved the bag, she should then decide to work it out. Isn't that rather...
Well, it's rather putting the chicken before the china shop, isn't it? Because she's grooved the bag and then suddenly she decides to... Work it out.
A little late.
A bit too late there, isn't it?
Because the bag is already grooved. Far too late. She should have worked it out before she grooved it, shouldn't she?
Yes.
And this presumably is the explanation of the...
The exasperation. She goes on to say,
we're going to shake it tonight.
We're going to shake it tonight.
We're going to shake it tonight, presumably in frustration, the fact that she's grooved the bag. Grooved the bag badly without having worked it out properly. So in her sort of frustration, she shakes the bag. Yes. Shakes it all night.
Out of exasperation. Ah. Then, of course, exhausted by all this, she goes on and says,
stretch out now. Stretch out, baby.
Stretch out. She wants to stretch out and fall into a
dark. Fall asleep. And then, but unfortunately, she says,
I hear you talking now.
What's that? The neighbours?
The neighbours chatting next door.
Through the paper thin wall comes the sound of the neighbours talking just when she wants to go to sleep.
Exactly. And she goes on to say, you turn me on, baby. This is a sort of jive, jazz boogie woogie abbreviation of turn the light on for me, baby. Turn me on, baby. Turn for me, in parenthesis, the light on, baby.
Oh, I see. Oh, a linguistic trick, rather like the German, I out of the door go must.
Exactly.
Similar to the boogie Harlem thing, isn't
boogie,
it?
Boogie Harlem, darky, jazz, rhythmic kuju thing.
And how does it go on?
It goes on.
You're burning up now, baby.
You burning up now, baby. The baby's turned the lights on, fused the whole house in the wicker. In flames. The holy glue set fire.
You don't think any of these lyrics could be in any way connected with making love or sex?
Oh, good Lord, no. And anyway, I wouldn't sing that sort of garbage.
Well, to summarise, basically, this is a simple story. The mama has gone out into the gay, bustling streets of Harlem. She's seen a brand new bag. She's bought it, this gaily coloured plastic bag. She brings it home, spends the whole night grooving it for her child. Then she discovers she's grooved it badly. She hasn't worked it out. And so in her rage, she shakes all night, attempts to go to sleep, but the neighbours start talking. She asks her child to turn on the light, but she fuses it, and the holy glue or wigwam goes up in flames. And we're left with the underlying question. Was it right for the mother to squander her money on these gaily coloured plastic bags? Wouldn't she have better spent it in rewiring the entire house? Is one left also with a question? Should there be legislation to prevent the sale of these bags to people who aren't quite ready to use them? I wonder.
Okay, then, let's go for a take on this one. We have red light and bell, please. Now, keep it quiet. Hello, please. Action.
Robert Neasden, author, poet, playwright, a man with a string of successful plays and films behind him, a man for all Neasdens, a lion in Neasden, an Anne of a thousand Neasdens. He needs solitude to work. Living alone in the country with his wife, children, dogs, and the occasional television crew. He describes how the idea for the film came to him.
I was in the cinema at the time, just me, my wife, and children, and dogs. I was watching this film. And suddenly I thought, a film. That's it. A film. It was so simple, I almost wept.
He takes his idea to famed producer-director Brian Neasden.
I saw it as a film about people.
Yeah?
People who need people.
People who need people. Yes.
Mm. Big people with universal emotions locked in noble conflict. A king, a queen, a bishop, fine language, cathedrals, horses.
Neasden works furiously on the first draft. Writing is exhilarating, agonizing, exhausting. Months later, he delivers it.
Yes, I like it, Bob. Yeah. It's probably a few ounces too long, but it's terrific. Yeah.
Brian Neasden postpones his scheduled spectacular, When Diana Dawes Ruled the Earth, to concentrate on Robert Neasden's project. Now it's a question of casting. His mind clicks into action. Why not Peter O. Neasden as the Archbishop and Richard Neasden as the King? Two giants of the B.O. who could set the screen alight. They leap at the chance of playing with each other.
Ah, that's much better. Yes. Yes.
Shooting begins on the crowning glory. Richard Neasden prepares for his role.
Well, I've always wanted to work with Brian, and
When I heard that Robert had written the script, well, I didn't have to read it. The money is neither here nor there. It's in Geneva.
Now watch the combined greatness of Peter O'Neaston, Sir Achim Neasden, and Richard Neasden in the electrifying cathedral confrontation.
My Lord Bishop.
My Lord Neasden, what est?
I est, my Lord.
My dear Lord Neasden, when I say what est, I mean what is it?
It is my teeth, my Lord. That is why I est.
I'll ask again, Lord Neasden, what ails thee?
Mild and bitter, how very kind. Thick. To ease these parted lips.
Speak not of mild and bitter in this holy house.
Forgive me, my lord. Like the humble snail, I kneel silently at thy feet. I crave thy holy indulgence. Could you possibly extend the episcopal hand and bear me up again?
What is thy news, Neasden?
Brave news, my lord. By Captain Hal, the king, God's instrument upon this earth, doth bear down upon thy holy haven, like a black falcon upon his innocent prey, the lowly doll.
Get to the nub, Neasden.
My lord, forgive me. I kneel like a cringing spaniel that hath his master most closely affected.
What will the king?
Divorce, my lord. Divorced. E'en now he frolics with his fancy mate, the strumpet bell.
There can be no divorce.
My lord, the king cries that the queen is barren. He yearns for a son, and Nell is big with his child. But hist, methinks I hear his kingly footsteps. I must away.
And I must pray.
John Bishop of Becketree!
Be still, this is God's house, I must do vespers.
Then let God wait. Or do we not read that his patience is infinite, whereas patience is a commodity most absent from my nature? I needs must talk to thee most pressingly for a favor.
I, Hal, the taverns buzz with rumors of thy indolent adultery.
I love her, John. I love my Nell. Each time I see her, my heart becomes a thousand fluttering larks.
What of the Queen and honor of England?
My barren Bess. My barren Bess gives me neither princeling nor a king's comfort.
Then shall I pray for thee.
Good job. Dost thou not remember those times when we were young? And used to go a-hunting and a-whoring together. Where is that John that used to wassail and rust like a mountain stag?
That John is dead.
And dead shall be the other John, unless annulment of these sterile bonds shall be granted. Wouldst have me spawn a bastard?
Hal, this is thy 12th marriage. The Pope grows weary of thy constant inconstancy.
Should the Queen agree? Then one more time my quill shall spill thy will upon the scroll, and then to knell with you. And now, perhaps, I needs must pray.
The morning's shooting completed, these two great stars relax over lunch.
Waitress. For me to start, I think, compote of grapefruit, small segments thus engendered in a vase.
For me the same, identical.
And then to follow, yes, fried fillet of plaice and lamb, and there with sage and onion sauce, garden peas, fresh from England's lands, and roast potatoes, too.
For me to follow very swiftly, pork, sausage, and onion turnover, with cabbages from the studded earth, roast potatoes from England's blazing oven.
And then to cap it all for me, semolina milk pudding to engender all those juices which do aid the digestion.
For me, nothing.
Nothing, my lord?
Nothing, my lord.
And two piping hot black coffees, then.
Finally, the passionate bedroom scene between the king and the queen, played here by Dame Raquel Neasden.
Bastard! Bitch! Adulterer! Slut! Whoremonger! Fishwife! Pig cow!
Milk, please!
So you met someone who set you back on your heels? Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how it feels? Goody, goody.
Please, release me. Let me go. For I don't love you anymore. Her lips are warm. Are yours are cold. Release me, my darling. Let me go.
So you gave her your heart too? Just like I gave mine to you? Goody, goody for you. Goody, goody for her. And I hope you're satisfied, you rascal, you.
Well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? I'm shaking like a leaf in a buzzing tree. My heart is stopped, but I'm as wild as a bug. I'm in love. I'm all shook up.
Let's twist again, like we did last summer. Let's twist again, like we did last year.
The party's over.
Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, happiness. Hello, loneliness. I wish that I could die.
Is that over, Eve?
Yes. We have no banana. We have no banana today.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I've got love in my tummy. And I feel like I'm loving you.
Film complete. Brian Neasden returns to his wife and family.
Oh, God, it's Martin to be home. Bob, you fix yourself with a drink and I'll go and get Vera and the kids.
Right.
Ah, marvellous. Vera! Vera, we're home. Vera, it's Brian.
At last, Vera. Author and director can relax. And forget the agony of filmmaking.
Vera! Vera! That's very strange. She was here 3 years ago.
There's a note here, actually, for you.
Ah, thanks.
Look at that.
Goodbye forever. Love, Vera. My God, what a fantastic title.
It's a marvellous title, isn't it? I see it as a film, a very contemporary film.
Yes, a film. A film.
And so, out of an ordinary domestic incident, a new idea is born. A new idea for the making of a movie.
Everybody's talking. I don't hear a word to say.
Is that you, Roger?
Yes, Father.
A cup of tea in here for you, if you'd like one.
It's very kind of you, sir, but I've just come in from Raga and I'm a bit grubby. I think I ought to go and have a shower first, sir.
Well, pour me a cup. There's a good chap, would you?
Certainly, sir. Yes, of course.
Thank you. How was school today?
Oh, much as usual, thank you, sir, but I caught someone having a crafty smoke behind the wooden buildings. I had to give him rather a ticking off. Such a filthy habit, you know, sir.
It's a filthy habit, Roger.
Yes. There we are, sir. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Roger?
Yes, sir?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Sit down. Roger, your mother and I were having a bit of a chat the other day, and she thought it might be a good idea if I was to have a bit of a chat with you.
A bit of a chat, sir.
A bit of a chat, yes, Roger, just
A bit of a chat.
What about, sir?
Well, there's nothing to be worried about, Roger. It's just that, well, to be perfectly frank, how old are you?
Well, to be perfectly frank, sir, I'm coming up to 18.
Just coming up to 18?
Well, on the verge.
On the verge of 18. Yes, well, I thought it might be a good idea to have a bit of a chat now, because I remember from my own experience that it was when I was just, you know, coming up to 18.
On the verge.
On the verge of it. That I first began to take a serious interest in the opposite number. Now, I don't know, Roger, if you know anything about the method whereby you came to be brought about.
Well, sir, some of the boys at school say very filthy things about it, sir.
This is what I was worried about, and this is why I thought I'd have a bit of a chat and explain absolutely, frankly, and openly the method whereby you and everybody in this world came to be. Roger, in order for you to be brought about, it was necessary for your mother and I to do something. In particular, it was necessary for your mother. It was necessary for your mother to sit on a chair. To sit on a chair which I had recently vacated and which was still warm from my body. And then something very mysterious, rather wonderful and beautiful happened. And sure enough, 4 years later, you were born. Now, there's nothing unhealthy about this, Roger. There's nothing unnatural. It's a beautiful thing in the right hands, and there's no need to think less of your mother because of it. She had to do it, she did it, and here you are.
Well, sir, it's very kind of you to tell me. One thing actually slightly alarms me. I was sitting in this very chair yesterday, sir, and I vacated it, and the cat sat on it while it was still warm. And should we have it destroyed?
It's a lovely chair, Roger.
Cat, sir.
Destroy? Oh, no, Roger, you don't understand. This thing of which I speak can only happen between two people who are married. And you're not married.
Not yet anyway, sir.
Not to the cat in any case. Well, Roger, now you have this knowledge about chairs and warmth, I hope you'll use it wisely.
Sir.
And take no notice of your school friends or what Uncle Bertie may say.
Dirty Uncle Bertie, they call him.
Dirty Uncle Bertie, and they're right, Roger. Your Uncle Bertie is a dirty, dirty man. He's been living with us now for 40 years. And it does seem a day too much. You know, if it hadn't been for your mother, Roger, I don't know where we'd have been. She's the only person who can really cope with Uncle Bertie. She's the only one who can really deal with him. I don't know if you realize this, Roger, but your mother even has to sleep in the same bed as Uncle Bertie to prevent him getting up to anything in the night. If only there were more people like your mother, Roger.
Well, I'm very pleased that you've told me this, sir, because, as I say, I'm very glad I don't have to believe all those filthy things that the boys at school say. And only yesterday, Uncle Bertie said to me...
Take no notice of Uncle Bertie, Roger. He's a sick, sick man, and we should feel sorry for him.
Well, I'll try, sir. Well, thank you, sir. I wonder if I should take a cup of tea up to Mother while it's still...
I wouldn't do that, Roger. She's upstairs at the moment, coping with Uncle Bertie.
Poor Uncle Bertie.
Poor Uncle Bertie.
Ha ha ha! I prefer attacking you like that. I thought you were a pterodactyl.
Yes, a lot of people mistake me for one from the back.
Yes, you look like one from the back. What are you doing in these parts?
Well, I thought I'd do a bit of work on the painting.
Oh, what sort of painting is that?
Well, it's a bit primitive, you know. It was a dodo, but they went extinct last week, and I had to make it on the earth.
Well, it's so nice. Whatever it is. What part of the animal is this?
Well, this is the back end. I've been working on it for weeks. The tail's been giving me an awful lot of trouble.
Oh, it always does, isn't it?
The Himalayan bee hibernates for 12 months a year. It is most usually found underground in the foothills of the Andes. The bee hunts in pears and other fruits for sustenance and has a somewhat savage nature. Unlike normal bees, it produces beef extract and is worshipped by a tribe of unbelievably stupid pygmies.
Here.
What?
Can't you read?
What?
Do not feed. You're not allowed to eat within the precincts of the zoo, Dad.
Oh, what shall I do with my biscuits, Pete?
Chuck them away. Give them to the animal.
Sorry, Pete. I didn't know, Pete. Sorry about that.
Nice warm reptile house.
Look at that.
Oh, dear.
Feel
like I
sit down, eh?
Oh, I'll tell you my special favourites in here, Dad.
Yeah.
Are those lovely geckos. Have you seen them, the geckos?
Geckos? What are they, Pete?
A gecko, Dad, is a lizard what has sucking pads on its feet.
Oh, so it can hang on glass, like, is it?
Well, it can if it likes. It can hang on anything, really, anything it fancies. It has a wonderful life, except, of course, it has to eat flies.
Flies?
Did you know that?
No, I didn't know
that. Oh, yes, it has to eat flies, because, as you know, God created it.
Yeah.
Like he did everything else in his almighty wisdom. And all the animals have to eat each other to keep the population down. And the gecko got lumbered with flies. And, you know, it's all right when it's born. Its mother brings it up, some flies all mashed up, daintily garnished with a daisy on top of it. So it's not what it's eating. But as soon as it learns to speak, Dad, and communicate, it says to its mother, "Excuse me, what's this I'm eating?" And she has to reply, "Flies."
"Darling."
Well, she sugars a pill a bit by saying, "Flies, darling, they're very good for you."
Yeah.
But that's why the gecko doesn't live very long. It can't bear eating the stuff.
Yeah. I don't blame it, really, with a diet of flies.
I couldn't bear that, eating flies.
I wouldn't like to be a gecko. I'd like to be a poisonous snake, actually, Pete.
Well, you've got, you know, fangs, and
fangs.
You've got prominent teeth, haven't you, already? You do well.
I'd follow them out, put a bit of cyanide in them, and go round and, you know, put their teeth into people's arms and kill them.
What sort of a poisonous snake would you be? Would you be an asp?
No, that'd be a viper.
Well, that's the same thing as an asp. An asp is a viper, Dad.
Is it?
Asp was a word invented by Shakespeare during the 13th century to denote a viper. Because, as you know, Shakespeare, what a wonderful writer.
What a wonderful writer.
He was doing this wonderful verse play about Cleopatra, how she got wrapped up in the carpet.
Oh, that's right. She was on the needle in the carpet.
That's right. Shakespeare had been writing this wonderful verse couplet to describe the scene when a snake comes rustling up her undies and begins to start biting into her
busty substances.
Into her busty substances. And he'd written this wonderful verse couplet, you see, but the only thing is, he only had one syllable to describe the snake.
Oh. So Viper was too long for the scansion, so he invented the word asp, and a very good word.
Wonderful. I suppose it's a sort of Shakespearean abbreviation for a stinging personality thing.
Oh, ASP, yes, I suppose that's the reason.
Yeah. Now, I don't reckon it was an asp what stung Cleopatra in the chest. I bet it was a bra constrictor.
What do you mean? It was an ass.
Well, a bra could stick to Pete. Bra, a boa could stick to Pete. It's a joke, Pete.
It was a joke, was it? Well, it's very bad taste. You can't make jokes about people who are dead because they can't fight back, darling.
Sorry, Pete.
I wouldn't be a reptile at all if I had the choice, you know. If I had the choice, I'd be something lovely and cuddly and lovable. Something like those lovely hummingbirds which hum with their myriad hues above the flowers. And they've got huge long tongues, you know, all coiled up like watch springs, and they can poke them out for 40 yards long, which means a hummingbird, Dad, can kiss at immense distances.
That means that you could stand on the Chiswick flyover and kiss someone up the Staines bypass.
What's more, you can be hovering 4 foot above the ground and humming. Wonderful opportunity.
Wonderful. I'll tell you a creature I think is a very cuddly little creature. That's a chameleon.
Versatile,
Dad. Versatile creature, Pete. Wonderful. They're so adaptable. They can take on the shape and colour of anything they like.
The colour or the hue can be taken on, Dad.
Yeah. Do you remember Mr. Rigby?
Yes.
He nearly went for a wedding ceremony with one.
He would have been very happy with a chameleon.
They're very adaptable.
Oh, they're lovely wives.
You know, I was here last week, Pete. I don't know if I told you in the zoo.
Yes, you did.
I saw this sign saying topical fish this way. Well, great, you know, see a few topical fish, get a few up-to-the-minute comments on current affairs, you know.
You thought you'd see some, you know, topical barbs about the situation in the world today.
That's right, yeah.
What do you see?
What did I see? I go in there, there's just a lot of fish floating about. More timeless than topical.
Nothing
Pete.
Topical there. Now, I'll tell you what you've done. What you've done, you've got into the tropical fish department.
Oh, I see.
That's tropical rather than topical, you see. And what has happened is, during the winter months, during the gales and the blustery weathers, sometimes some of the letters become dislodged, you see, because of the gales. And obviously the letter R has become dislodged in this case. I was talking to the keeper about it, actually, and he said that very often, during the winter months, his R's blew off. he found that was a feature of his winter life, his R's blowing off.
Well, I think I've had enough of the reptile house.
I've had quite enough.
I'll tell you what, let's go on to the wonky house.
No, that's an M. What's got blown upside down?
Seven. Parliament, Buckingham Palace, and now the Houses of Parliament. Soon we in Britain will have no tourist attractions left.
There has got to be an explanation.
Could you come in here a moment, Brains?
I'd better go, Pop.
Why, son?
I'm playing his cotton-picking part as well.
Boy, Johnny.
Yes, Pop?
Your strings are showing.
Well, I've been putting on a bit of weight recently.
What is it, Jeff?
Any leads, Brains?
Well, I think I've come up with something.
Yes?
The plot against the British Travel and Holiday Association, they're definitely using gunpowder.
Gunpowder? That can only mean one man.
You mean?
Yes, Master Braun. Quick, ring Lady Dorothy.
Telephone for you, me lady.
Who, Vince?
Yes, me lady.
Why do you speak in that ridiculous accent?
It's the American idea of how the lower class Britisher speaks, me lady. Toodlepip wants her, God blimey. It's good for the tourist trade, me lady.
Speaking of the tourist trade... Yes? Oh, I see. I've just discovered where Master Braun plans to strike next.
Where, my lady?
Anne Hathaway's cottage.
Right. Activate Thunder Stanger Crab Starg.
Come on up there. Super Thunder Sting car has come.
Excellent. My ruse has worked. I can proceed with the destruction of international rescue. Now the Thinger Stupa Thing Bar is out of the way.
You mean Super Thunder Sting Car, Master Braun?
Shut your face, Kraut.
Yes, Master Braun.
Deactivate Central Mystifier.
Yes, Master Braun.
I'm approaching Anne Hathaway's cottage now.
No sign of Master Braun.
Something's wrong, Jeff. Master Braun.
Super Thing Car Garber.
You mean Super Thunder Sting Car.
Get knotted, car.
What the...
Hey!
I'm returning to international rescue.
Excellent. Now we will blow up Super Thing Stang Blanger Bar to the Jupiter and international rescue all in one go.
Master Braun, you...
So glad to see you, Johnny Jupiter.
What have you done with Dad and Brains?
I have eliminated them.
This is terrible.
But not as bad as your acting, fat face. Tell me, how did you get into this show?
I knew someone who pulled strings for me.
I have stood quite enough of your cheap heroics. I have something... specially reserved for you.
Oh, no. Not that.
Yes.
Golly. Good heavens. Son of a gun.
You're a genius, Master Braun. But aren't we supposed to lose?
I can't help it if I keep forgetting the script. Come on. Let's go do something nasty to someone.
Yeah.
a glib of glued would wander nude throughout his spacious castle, so everyone could plainly see his huge brown paper parcel. In this the glid kept carefully hid his jewel's golden crown, tied to his wrists with bits of string. He never put it down. There's never been a man so mean, he didn't mind the cold. When clothes grow old, their value goes, like a piece of gold. And when the glid got into bed, he'd cuddle with his treasure and kiss his parcel constantly. This was his only pleasure. His servants all were quite appalled at everything he did, but no one dared to say a word. They feared the cruel glid, for he could kill a man at will. His power was absolute. And every night at 8:30, they'd smile and kiss his foot.
Oh, glid of glued, you are so good as any gludite knows.
They whispered this each time they kissed his gnarled and grimy toes. And when they ate, it was their fate to sit with him at table and look as grateful as they could. But very few were able. To save on food, he fed them wood mixed up with grains of rice. On Sundays, as a special treat, he served them boiled mice. When in the mood, the glid of glued would have a bit of fun with Sparkwin, the court jester, a man of 81, who'd say,
I say, who does not love our glid? I'll bid you stay and then raise your hand.
But no one ever did.
We love him so because we know that nowhere could we find a man so generous and true, so gentle and so kind. Oh, lovely Cliff, we love you so. I kiss your knee, I suck your toe. Oh, lovely Glid, don't ever go.
And then the Glid would sternly bid them drink the loyal toast with water from a plastic cup, 1/4 full at most. He saw God one dark and stormy night, a figure with a green moustache and clad in shrouds of white.
You go quickly,
the vision said.
Get on your knees and pray. If you want to enter paradise, you give all your wealth away.
What, all of it?
Replied the Glid.
My crown and jewels as well?
Yes, all of it, you greedy twit. Or else you'll burn in hell.
In wild despair, with many a tear, the Glid undid the strings and handed over jewels and crown and all his precious things.
Thank you.
The sobbing Glid returned to bed to moan and weep and fret. And when the sun came up at dawn, his sheets were soaking wet. His morning tea arrived and he shrieked as he seized the cup.
Fetch Miss Sparkwin here at once. I need some cheering up.
Oh, I fear he's gone,
replied the man.
He caught the morning flight. He left behind this green moustache and a long white cotton nightie. And here's a note that Sparkwin wrote. It seems a little odd. It says, goodbye, you greedy Glid. find Sparkling alias Gorg.
The Glyph fell ill, a sudden chill, and very soon he died. The funeral was a gay affair, and not a Gludite cried. They drank and sang, the church bells rang, and then there was a dance. No flowers decked his grave save one, signed Sparkling, South of France.
And here's the moral of this tale of greed and gross deceit. If God asks you for all your cash, do ask for a receipt. You know it makes sense.
In 1921, an unknown foreign actress came to Hollywood. 15 years later, she left a total stranger. Today, she remains an enigma. Anna Enigma was born in the friendly Finnish fishing village of Kromsk. Her father, a Dutch captain, her mother, a French polisher. But from an early age, Anna yearned for the theater. She broke free from the family foes of the friendly Finnish fishing village of Farmsk and went to finishing school. Then, in her professional debut as a fashion model, she attracted the attention of talented casting director Stig Sturman Vrang. Stillman Vrang quickly saw her vast potential. He rushed her to Hollywood and landed her a part in Matt Busby Barkley's hilarious extravaganza, 3,000 Girls Jump Into the Sea. Even in this small, almost insignificant role, Anna's magnetic animal quality made an unforgettable impact. Stormont Drang persuaded her to change her name to Emma Bargo, which is Finnish for Pine Forest. Emma Bargo was put under contract by Louis B. Mabee and startled the world in her first starring role.
Come in now, I can't tell you why. Come back in 5 minutes.
Cinema goers were amazed by the aggression and unprecedented physicality.